Yeah, we like to tell people to, one, never put us on hold, because often there's music on hold. And also now these mics, like I'm wearing, are so sensitive. You could pick up anything in the room, and same with the speakerphone. So, and we like to keep our lines open because we try to have open discussion. Sometimes it doesn't work out that way, but we like to keep people online as long as possible.
Great.
Someone just joined?
Yes, this is Meg Burgett from Alaska.
Oh, great. Okay.
I'm new to the Alaska Forum position with the program.
Excellent. Alaska, Tacoma, Florida, Ohio, we're well represented. Well, we're going to get started. What we wanted to talk about is keeping our students in class. But before we start anything, and some of you are new, so if you want to, if you're not getting PLC notices, and if you, particularly if you don't get the notes that will come out on Friday, just email me to make sure. We have two lists. We have GLOWS list, which is a large list, and we have a PLC list to get the notes of each session. And it's, my address is msenew, that's msenew at aol.com. I get them either way, msenew at AOL or msenew at Gmail. Either one works. We also, on the larger list, everyone gets email reminders of this, but they may not get the notes. That's a bigger distribution. You probably, if you're on both lists, you'll probably get maybe more reminders than you want, but we want to make sure everyone gets the word. We always start these out with any news from Washington, and of course we're all interested in that. And GLOW, what's any poop today?
Yeah, just a little bit. First, though, I just wanted to also mention that all of the post-session notes from past sessions are on our Brownfields Toolbox website. So if you go to the homepage and then click on the top tab that says PLC Sessions, you can actually see the post-session notes back to the beginning of when we did this, and I believe this is session 167. Is that right, Mike? We've done 167 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those notes are out there. As far as news from Washington, just very short and sweet, just that the proposals are being reviewed, and they are anticipating that selections will be made sometime in May or June. So I take that as a good sign. Nothing's been cut yet. And that's all I have, Mike. Short and sweet,
okay.
Like I said.
Okay. Okay. The big elephant in the room that we all read about, of course, it would be remiss not to say something about it, is we don't know any more than anyone else knows about funding increases or cuts. The administration has their views, or even within the administration, there are people with different viewpoints. You've probably read about some are not so good. Some are good. We are very well supported by mayors who love this program. Governors like it. Many congressional members like it. So the way this works is the president sends its wish list or its ideas to Congress, but that really doesn't mean a whole lot. The real action happens in two places, primarily in the House and the Senate in the Appropriations Committees. And then those have to be approved by both, by the overall committee. Then also there is some tweaking that goes on in EPA with the more general, when it's not a very specific program, or if in the bill, if it's not laid out by the Appropriations Committee, there might be some discretionary movement of funds around, whether they're everybody gets a little bit of cut or some programs are eliminated or whatever. So, but the key is we don't know anything about any of that. And I don't know that anyone does, either in the agency or for that matter in the administration or Congress. It's all going to be worked out in the next couple months. So what we suggest to everybody is keep your eyes tuned. We also suggest that everyone keep engaged with their community. One thing that through the years we've learned is that if your community is not engaged, they don't know you exist. And that really helps. We have many congressmen who come to graduations. In fact, in many of the northeastern states, we've had them come to our programs. We've had them come to graduations. We've had them presenting checks. They love photo ops, and they love this program because it's very local, particularly in a congressional district. And we always suggest that all grantees, for those of you who are coming up against graduation, just send an invite to your congressional office. They might send a rep to it. They may not acknowledge it. They may love it. And this happens more often than not. And it doesn't take much to send a little invite to the congressman and tell him what you're doing, a little bit about your program, which he probably already knows about. Suggest to him that you're having a graduation, and he's an invited guest. And you may be surprised. You may be really surprised. But if you don't do that, he won't even know it's happening. So I would say it's just a good thing to do, regardless of any political interest. I also would suggest even the mayor of the cities. You'd be amazed at how many mayors and particularly congressmen love to go to these programs to see the kids in their neighborhood who didn't have a job, didn't have a program going for them, are now getting jobs, getting great jobs, and they see your program. So I guess that's what my advice is, and keep it encouraged. We'll just let everyone know when we find out anything. You may hear it first from whatever happens, but we're encouraged. Another thing that I'm encouraged about is, as looking, and I'll put these in the notes, the Employment Training Administration, Department of Labor, has got several RFPs out. And these RFPs are associated with training. They're for ex-offenders, VA, homeless people. These are training and administration programs. They're very large. Not one likely that a smaller organization could handle, but what it's important is when you see these huge grants, you might see if your state or someone in your state is involved in these grants. So I like to put them in there, even though they're not environmental job training programs. Many of them are underserved population training programs. And if you can locate whoever is involved in that, you may want to touch base with them as a networking opportunity to tell them about your program and what you're doing. That would be very helpful. So we like to include those. I think that Glow hit it in May. Is any of you who did not get a letter from EPA is fine. You're going on to the final evaluation criteria. So the next thing you'll hear is whoever, now it may not be you, it may be someone, it might be the president or someone, whoever's name is on the application as the principal person who signed off, will get the news first. So you may, another hint is for those of you who submitted applications, touch base with whoever is there just to let them know, to perhaps call you or let their administrative assistant let them know that you will not get the notice first. They will get it first. We've had grantees who actually didn't know they had gotten the grant because it had gone through different channels. So that's just a helpful hint. Well, what we wanted to do today, and many of you are involved in a cohort right now and you're doing training. Some of you are just getting started and planning for the next RFP. We want to talk about keeping your students, keeping them in class. Now, we have a placement rate above 72% or so, but the hidden figure there is the retention rate. If you recruit 25 people, it would sure be nice to graduate 25 people. This is a very big challenge, and it's very difficult for smaller communities to address this, sometimes in larger ones, because smaller communities don't have the ability to screen as much as large communities do. So this is kind of logical, but sometimes it's worth talking about. I kind of divide it into four main groups. One, pretend you're a student, and you have to say, is this program the right fit for you? And we're going to come back to this. Is this something that you could see yourself doing? The second one, do you feel welcome when you get into this program? Are you an outlier? Are you different than everyone else? The third one is, are there factors that you don't have control over? There are external factors that are going to keep you from staying into this class. And then, of course, finally, another issue is, Is this what you really want to do? And we're not talking today about the environmental courses. We're not talking about really environmental at all, other than whether there's someone who really wants to do this or not. We're talking about these very subjective factors that we have to ask ourselves, well, how come this program has 100% retention, which some do, and this program over here lose 5, 6, 7, 8 people? And it's a combination of things. And what I want to do is talk about it a little bit, and then I want to get some suggestions of some of the things that some of you have tried in your program that seem to work pretty well. I like to start at the beginning, and you don't think of retention and recruitment as being connected, but they're extremely connected. You have to form a group in your class that's going to all the old adage of all floats, all boats rise in a rising tide. This is an issue of educational disparities. And I'm not saying that it's fair or right, but I'm talking about assembling a group that is not going to pull your hair out. When we've talked about this in other PLCs, if you have tremendous educational disparities, someone who has not been in class for 25 years, someone who just got out of high school, you're going to have to intervene in some way to help this person that hasn't been in a classroom in 25 years. You may also have, that may be a cultural disparity, it may be an educational disparity, or just getting used to being in the classroom. These are all parts of screening. There may be cultural disparities in terms of, well, I'll give you a really example, a way out example in an urban area. What if you have, you're recruiting and just bringing everyone in, and it turns out that you've got two rival gang members, and these gangs are on the side, they may be peaceful now, but then they're not. This is not a good thing. So you may have to deal with issues of gang affiliations in some cases. And of course, if you're in a semi-suburb, these are things you might not even think about. You might have gender issues. You may have female students, and many of our programs have many female students. Some of them are all female. Some are mixed. And when we talk about a gender-neutral program, you may say, well, we're gender-neutral. Are you? Do you have female instructors? How many, look across the recruitment class, do you have 15 guys and 2 girls, or 20 and 1, or are you really gender neutral? Are your instructors gender neutral? And we're going to talk about that. Do your recruitment materials, are they gender neutral? And again, all this is tying into keeping your students in class. Another issue in terms of this whole recruitment, and I'm talking about this under recruitment because this is the time everyone wants to look at things like, how did you do on the TABE test, or how did you, you went through the interviews and you did an interview, a one-on-one interview, and the guy seems pretty good or the gal seems great. She really has a desire. She's got the academic ability and she's in. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what happens once you're getting into class and you're in class for 4 weeks. Another issue is location. Again, we're going to talk about this in a second. Are you recruiting students that have to come from the other side of town to get to your class every day in the winter when it's dark out? How are they going to get to class? Not once or twice, and now, yeah, I can get to class. Can you do it consistently? If you're doing an 8-week program and it's every morning and it's through the winter and it's a difficult time and he can't get there, it's not his fault, but he found himself, he's in over his head and he can't get to class. These are all issues that really tie into keeping your student in class. They're not so much issues in a college or university classroom, but they become a real issue when we talk about these environmental workforce development programs, because you're bringing in a lot of diverse people from a lot of different areas. And of course, we touched about these things like the literacy and the remediation, the programs that we normally think of, but we're thinking about these other subtle things that will keep you from getting 100% retention. So how do we go about this? And the second major thing I talked about was feeling welcome. And that relates to that first one. How you want everyone in the class to feel like a team. And it's all about team building. I think OAI and several of the grantees do a great job of doing tryouts. And they do, and when you come to the annual grantee meeting, we'll be doing demonstrations on tryouts and team buildings and team games. And they might say, you might say, what does this have to do with environmental workforce training? It has to do with building a team and having people feel welcome, joking around, games that are sometimes silly, but they're fun, and they're laughing, and they're laughing at each other, and they're having a good time. This is a subtle form of team building so that people... What makes people come to class and what makes people even want to come to class? It's because they got friends there. And so we have to build friendships in some way. And a good place, and if you want to try it, tie it into your recruitment, you do tryouts where they're coming to orientations. The more they say of each other, the more they're going to say, I can deal with this program. So you have tryouts. At the tryouts, you do games. You do some team building games. You play some computer games. There's lots of them that are available, and many of those, of course, we'll demonstrate at the all grantees meeting, but you and many of our grantees, all the successful ones, often get involved in things like that as part of that recruitment process. Do you have social nights where people come together as part of the orientation? So there are few programs, an all-women's program that they meet at a local, it's not a club, kind of a tavern-ish kind of thing, like a beer night. And they do that every, I don't know if it's every week or every month, but they go and have pizza together. And it's outside, totally outside the program, and they just have this social night. And they're, again, they're building bonds. And we find in the most successful programs, the graduates of these programs are friends, and they keep in touch for a long time. It's almost like being in the Army. You went through it, they're all of a sudden, wow, they're friends outside. Another thing this does when you do the tryouts and the team buildings, if you've got people with different social clubs who are in different social groups who you know will not get along together on a long-term basis with the people, other people in the group, they're going to be out before they're in the program. So you'll get them, you'll filter them out in a in a subjective way where they'll find that they just don't work together. They've got conflicts, whether it's social, whether it's economic, or whether it's just an educational thing, or it's a cultural thing. They can, in some ways, they'll filter them out. And you've got to give those people an escape hatch to where it's not after you've gotten them into the program, it's before they commit to the program. So they, at that point, they might say, I just don't feel comfortable with this group. Might be a young person who's in a group of old people, or might be older senior people who are in a group of young kids, and they might say, this just isn't something that I want to spend the next 8 or 10 weeks with, and I don't think it fits me. So you want to kind of build this all into this recruitment process. So then say we get into the program. The third thing I mentioned was these externalities, these external factors. And these are things that it's no fault of the person that is the student, the participant. It's a problem that he has no control over. One I already mentioned was transportation. He probably didn't even think about getting to class, or figured he could get to class, he could take a cab, but can he take a cab every day for 8 weeks? Or there is no bus that goes there, or it takes me 3 hours to get there, or 2 hours to get there. And people will say, I can do it, and they do. You always hear stories about people walking miles to get to class, and they could. Does that person, can he do it? And that may pop up. Now, you can resolve that. Many of our grantees have deals with the transportation department or with HHS where they subsidize transportation, whether it's a bus routes. And it's always good to check bus routes. Where are you training versus where is your target group? This simple thing can really help you in terms of retention. If your training center is really close to your population, if they just have to walk two blocks or take one bus and it's real easy for them to get there, your retention rates are going to be a lot higher. As a matter of fact, it's even better when you can find employers that are also close, because after they graduate, they have to be able to get to the job. So that whole issue of geography and where everyone lives is very important. In fact, we've got Alaska Forum here. You use, I believe, you use residency, where now your people are scattered all over Alaska, and you bring them into Fairbanks, I believe. Is that true? That are you familiar with?
Bring them to Anchorage.
Okay,
yeah, we bring them to Anchorage. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you resolved
all
of those
for that initial training.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that? You as part of the recruitment process, then you say, "We'll bring you in."
Yeah, there's travel allowed, and some of the funding that has been pulled together for the program. So we're able to bring a portion in from other places. Not as many as we like, because then the employment's not there, but we're trying to beef that part up.
Someone just put us on hold. This is what happens when you get put on hold. We're going to have to talk about this until this person comes on, and then we'll read him out for a while. He's probably someone who joined after I talked about this. Can anyone hear me at least?
I can hear you.
I hear you.
I can hear you too.
We're going to talk loud, and hopefully it's going to be a short conversation that he's going to have with whoever it is. The next thing, of course, is training schedules. And you've got to find out whether your students can actually make it to class. Are you going to have night classes? Are you going to have working hours? For example, often you may want to emulate regular working hours.
Thank you for holding. We'll be with you shortly.
Oh, isn't that fun? Okay. So anyway, I hope he's not trying to get to his cable company, because that would be a problem. So are you going to have work hours, or are you going to do Saturday classes? And that may be what you have to do in terms of keeping... Whoever has put us on hold, could you please never do that again? We just got some messages and a lot of nice music, but we're going to go on. Okay. So you may want to have night classes. You may have work hours. You may be doing Saturdays. You have to decide whether you're going to go a concentrate program. So, again, we've had grantees who have had to shift that, because once they got their target group in, they found out that a lot of their students had to work. So they really decided just to go to some nights or a mix, or some of them were part-time. So you had to adjust your schedule for that. And, of course, those who, again, in your recruitment, if they know that, they're going to have to drop out. It's an external problem that comes up. Another one is child care services. All of a sudden, you've got an issue with child care. Now, again, some of you have worked with HHS, and you've got that taken care of. Some of you have associations with bigger programs, and you may have child care on the premise, and that's also possible. So, again, that's one of those external issues. Legal aid is another external issue. You may have a person that gets into trouble or has problems, and he has to show up to court, and he may have to go to his parole officer. And as we talked to Pittsburgh last week, and that was exactly the case where their students had pre-apprentice programs going, and the tests for the pre-apprentice program, which were only a certain day, were the same days of a court probation hearing or a court case, and they had to really intervene. And this should not be underestimated. I always think of Art Shanks, who has worked with the legal system so much the judges know him. And he's constantly going into court to work with his kids, whether it's expungement or some other issue that's come up. So it's really important that if you're planning a program or if you're in a program now, you just can't dismiss the fact that these people can take care of all these things. If it were you and me and we had the same problem, what would we do? And the issue is maybe once or twice you could handle it, but after a while, these things come up and you just get discouraged and you just, I say, I can't do this. I just can't, I can't handle all these issues. And what we like to see is kind of like a case manager or a personal advocate. You don't have, you may not have the resources to have everyone have a case manager, but we don't have to call them case managers. We can just call them a friend that makes sure that everyone in that course, that someone is looking after them. Someone is kind of their backup, their back, that they can actually have a relationship with them so they could sit down with them and say, you've been acting funny in class. Have you got some problems? You know, or you missed the class. Is there anything I can help you with? Those kind of things. And he might say things like, it might be a child care issue where you may know a source he can go to get resolution, or you may even be able to help him, or you may be able to go to court with him, or you may be able to act as his advocate, where he just says, nobody would do that for me. I just have to drop out. So that's, again, something you really have to consider. Of course, financial literacy, we talk about the courses that are not supported by EPA, but these are all courses that are needed. But it's also part of retention, because someone may have child support. They may have their own money issues. It's always good, and most of our grantees at that portion talk about credit, not getting overextended, because when they do get out, they're going to be making some good money, and they have to be able to take care of it. But we also realize that many of those students may have those issues in class. And again, you don't want to give that, make that a reason or an excuse that they have to drop out. So again, this whole idea of interventions, you may feel funny about being aggressive and intervening in someone's, you might think that's his personal business, but no, it's really part of it. And again, as we look at these grantees, I think the best ones are ones that really get to know these students. They make pretty much lifelong friends. And actually, the friends make friends with each other. It's a peer-to-peer learning experience. And that's really important. And we like to think of instruction as peer-to-peer. And when you're choosing your instructors, try to keep away from the talking heads. This isn't a university. We're lots of labs, lots of peer-to-peer learning. Ask your instructors, are you going to go on any field trips? If you're just starting a program, are you doing some community service? It doesn't even have to be exactly the environmental occupation you're training. Community service is team building. So you're going out on a trip, or you're going to meet somewhere and you're going to go somewhere afterwards. You're going to be doing some things together to build these bonds. And what we're getting at here is as students become friends, they'll come to class and they'll graduate with that class. And if they fall behind, their friends are going to say, hey, guy, you can't drop out. You can't do this, because we want you to keep coming to class and we want you to graduate. So they're going to support each other. And these are things we never think about, because it's not part of the program. There's no course in it, but it's going to make a difference between the person who loses 5, 6, 7 people and the person says, oh, we graduate 100%. We're going to graduate 100% of our students. And you see, when you talk to Art, what's your retention rate? Oh, 100%. Oh, well, wait, how do you do that? And most of his program are things like I've just mentioned. There's some other things as you get towards the end. And that's that last question, is this really what I want to do? And that's where those internships come in. Internships, field trips, even stipends. We've got some programs with stipends. And those people get to go out on a job. And it's amazing when someone goes out on a job and they just do a little bit of the work, they really love it. I used to counsel engineers, and when I had a freshman that was dropping out, I'd try to get him enrolled in a co-op program. And the thing, and it almost always saved the student, because the co-op program, they're actually doing things, they've got their hands on, they may not be doing exactly what they were going to be trained to do, but they got experience and they said, I like these people, I can do this stuff. And that'll motivate them to stay into the program. So to the extent that you could work with some of your employers to say, would you take an internship, or would you even a shadowing project, a community service project, or something that he can get into the business and see what it's like, it'll be a tremendous motivation. Limitless Vistas, for example, gets kids into the water, wastewater programs. And you may not even have a wastewater program, but that's okay, because they're in the field and they're seeing what some of these environmental occupations are all about. So, and a lot of group projects and peer-to-peer learning. We've got several grantees out there that have done a great job. What have you all found fairly effective in keeping your students, or what have you found that drives them away, that doesn't work, that you got to stay away from? Any ideas out there? I know that Tacoma has done some really been successful in keeping your students active and keeping them going. I think.
This is Michelle from Tacoma.
Yes.
I know in the past we had done some of those tryout orientations, and I think Roland could probably speak a little bit more on this, but I think it had helped kind of build those bonds between students. We haven't done them the past few cohorts, but the last cohort we had, we just graduated last week, and they actually, we've all commented, even the instructor, that it was the best cohort we've ever had. They actually, a couple of students got job offers during the program, and they stayed in the program to finish out because they were such a tight group, like they all got along really well. I think those tryouts definitely do help. And the case management piece you talked about, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we were on, but we have partnered with Goodwill Industries, and they've been fantastic at providing some of that case management. So checking in with the students and, you know, following up with them, finding out if there's anything they need, any resources or help to keep them in class. We also do that here since we do the training here on campus. Roland goes to the class every single day to take the attendance and check on the students, and he reports any issues that he hears from the students that Amy from Goodwill and I can follow up on them, as does the instructor. So as he's working with the students and they kind of share that, you know, any difficulties they're having in class or outside of class, he shares that information with us right away so that we can follow up and provide resources.
You do a great job. It's interesting that everything we talked about today has nothing to do with environmental workforce development, job training, but everything to do with the success of the program. Sometimes I've come to believe that the environmental training is the easiest part of this program. It really goes back very strongly to recruitment and making that bond. Those Facebook, do you all have a Facebook network among your students? Sometimes that helps too.
We just started that this quarter, so it's kind of slow going, but we've created a page for the students that we can post job postings to and other information as well.
We've seen often that it transcends even your cohorts, that people become friends and they're friends forever, and they help each other. Once they get out, they say, hey, we're looking for some people. Have you got a job yet, or do you want to switch over to where I'm at? And that's the nice thing about Facebook, is it gives you, it's almost like internal tracking among themselves. It's a very neat way to go. Well, we, as usual, we've gone over our time, but I did want to talk about retention, because so often, I mean, if you have 20 seats, so you're going to have 20 graduates, and boy, if you lose 5 or 8, it seems like it's a shame that there was someone else that might have been able to use that seat and get a good job. So I think it's something we often don't think about in our planning our programs, but I think we need to. So, well, we're going to do, in 2 weeks we'll have another session. This month, I'm just going to mention it today, we're going to have an exciting thing. We do a webinar once a year, some kind of a mid-session webinar, and we're going to do one on health and safety. Glo, did you want to mention that?
Yeah, the grantee mid-year update webinar this year. We try to, like Mike said, do it halfway between grantee meetings, which are held in August, So we just scheduled that today. In fact, the date of the update webinar is going to be Tuesday, April 25th at 1 o'clock Central Time, so 2 o'clock Eastern Time. For those of you who have been to the grantee meeting in the past 3 or 4 years, we have had our main trainer here, our lead trainer here at the college where I work, John Morgan, come in and do the OSHA part of the training. And he's going to be doing a presentation on the webinar on April 25th. And we haven't yet completed the agenda, but he will be on it. The webinar will last, oh, probably around 45 minutes. I will be putting a save the date out on the listserv here probably yet this week. But save the date, April 25th, 1 o'clock Central Time.
And what we're going to be doing is we'll have another PLC on the 12th, and then we'll give you plenty of reminders, and then we'll skip a couple weeks to the PLC, and then we'll start it up again in the beginning of May. So we'll just keep on rolling, and this is going to be exciting health and safety, because if you're going to talk about making sure you choose the right instructors, what they should be teaching, how to protect your students, John is great for those of you who have been at the all grantee meeting. So we'll give you plenty of time to know when it's going to be and plenty of notices. Well, thanks, everybody, and thank you for the input. You know, Tacoma's always been an outstanding program, and actually, Lewis and Clark, the people that have come on from the different programs have done well, and hopefully we'll find out as soon as possible that the new grantees will be re-upped. So I'll send out some notes with this information on Friday, and hopefully we'll see you all again on April 12th. Good.
Hi, this is Dr. Gale, yes. The person yes. in the 81-degree weather in Bethune-Cookman University in Florida.
Yes.
And I wanted to have a more direct conversation, probably individual conversation with you about the program. I think
sure.
our university, my president actually had me sign on to the call, and
okay.
they're trying to do something differently, and we're not in one of your programs. We do not currently have a grant, so I wanted to find out more information, and
okay.
would like to have a time to speak to you separately
okay.
to find
okay.
out about
okay.
all of the innovation.
Do you have a pen paper? And you could email your contact information to you.
I did. I took down your email address at the beginning of the call, and I sent
okay.
you my information.
Good. If you send me a time and a phone number that would be good to call you, I'll give you a call.
Okay, that would be great. Thanks.
And again, it's msenew@aol.com. And that goes for anyone
okay.
if you ever have a question or something you want to talk about. We do it all the time. And I'll get back to you, and we'll set up a little conversation and go wherever you want to go on that.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thanks, everybody, and we'll be talking to you soon. Have
thanks,
a good
everyone.
Day.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Bye.